Hi, my name is Marie McGinnity, and welcome to my first podcast, titled How to Win a Dream Date with Your Favorite TV Star and Then Totally Piss Him Off Without Really Trying. Well, people have asked me how I came to be the chosen one. I guess it goes back to about a year ago when my renewed interest in Dark Shadows led me to write my first fan fiction. And that led to a long-winded series based on the life and times of my favorite character, Willie Loomis. Well, one day while appropriating screenshots at the Willie Loomis Saves Collinsport website, I noticed a thread on the forum called Where's Johnny, which was full of speculation as to the whereabouts of my favorite actor. Then there was more of the same on several Dark Shadows Facebook pages. Apparently the guy virtually fell off the face of the earth a few years ago, stopped attending festivals. Even his co-stars, when asked, would decline to comment, other than to say, "He's fine." Sounded sort of ominous. Then, I remembered reading an article a while back on Hub Pages, titled, "John Carlin is the Original Willie Loomis," which is a wonderful blog by Kim Harris, who grew up down the street from the Carlins and is still good friends with John's son, Adam. Well, I ventured to email Kim and ask if she was still in touch with the family and how our guy was doing. Kim wrote back to say that, sadly, John was not well and was in the hospital suffering from the effects of untreated diabetes. And that began a friendship that developed over the next 45 emails and several phone calls. John was moved to St. Joseph's Rehab Center in Burbank and then to Studio City Rehab. She sent me his address, saying it might cheer him up to hear from a fan. Not to digress, but around that time, my teenage daughter decided to drive our car into a ditch. And coming out, it flipped over, skidded across the road, and got T-boned by oncoming traffic. As I sat in the ICU at the hospital that night, watching her sleep for hours, I pulled out a piece of paper and, to distract myself, started to write my first fan letter. It was a long night, so the letter ended up being about 4 pages long. I told John how he had inspired me as an actor and talked about some of my favorite parts that he's played, but mostly I said that he has many fans on the internet that love him and care about him and want him to get well. And for good luck, I send him the Polski baseball cap I bought at the Polish-American Festival at Our Lady of Częstochowa. Strangely, when I bought it a year ago, I had said, I'm going to give this to John Carlin. I asked Kim if it was okay to pass around John's address because others wanted to send their good wishes. Got the green light on that, and thus began my letter-writing campaign, emphasizing repeatedly for everyone to put their kind thoughts into a letter or a card, otherwise John won't see it. He and Adam do not do computers. Not long afterwards, another email arrived from Kim. She said, "I just talked to Adam, and he is so touched by your efforts that he would like you to call, and he wants to take you to John for a visit." And she added his phone number. How exciting was that? I promised to call as soon as I got back from my matinee and ran off to work. Oh, shit. I can't go to L.A. This was mid-July. I was performing in one show and directing another and would not be free until the end of August. Later that evening, hours after I arrived home, my daughter looked up from playing Temple Run on her Kindle. Oh, John Carlin called.
What?
Or his son, whatever. I didn't take the message. As I was waiting for my heart to stop palpitating enough to return the call, it occurred to me to check my cell phone. And I had a voicemail.
"Hello, this is Adam.
I have someone who wants to talk to you. Here, Daddy." "Hello, Marie. I just wanted to say thank you for everything. I love you, sweetheart. There's love there. A lot of love. Sorry I missed you. Bye, honey." I played that voicemail for anyone who would listen for weeks. Afterwards, Adam and I talked on the phone for, about an hour. He is the sweetest, friendliest guy you ever met. And we are both only children with an unhappy 80-year-old parent in a nursing home that has lousy food and heaps of paperwork. That's when he told me that John also had surgery for cancer, and Adam didn't think when he went in there that he was going to last long. But things turned around, he started eating again, and was on the road to recovery. Now he calls Adam sometimes 50 times a day, asking for a hot dog or oysters. And that began my phone relationship with Adam Carlin. And I announced to the world that I was going to visit my favorite TV star. Then Wallace McBride at Collinsport Historical Society asked me if I would do a podcast interview while I was there. And Adam agreed, saying that his dad loves to talk and tells wonderful stories. His son, by the way, also knows great stories about growing up with John and Dark Shadows, and I really hope to get to do an interview with him someday. Later, when things settle down. Anyway, I found a place to stay with my old college roommate who lived about 30 minutes away from Studio City and arrived in LA on August 24th. The next day, I set off to meet John. Adam said to bring a hamburger, fries, and a Coke. But driving on the freeways in LA scared the living crap out of me, and I didn't get there until early afternoon and could not find a burger joint. The closest thing was a pizza parlor across the street, and great, they don't make hamburgers. So I ordered a meatball parm, and that took another 30 minutes to get out. Adam called. Would I be there soon? At the last minute, Adam couldn't be there because of a family emergency involving his stepdad. Yes, I'm on my way. I grabbed the styrofoam containers and ran across the street and into his room, looking hesitantly at the patient on the far side of the room behind the partition. I'm here. Oh, it was the guy in the first bed. Oh, shit, I didn't recognize him. Strike one. He had lost a lot of weight, and his shock of white hair was now a wispy gray. Oh, but that voice was unmistakable. Hi! I flashed a big grin. Sorry, I didn't recognize you. I expected you to look sickly, but you look wonderful. Yeah, enough of small talk. He sat up on the edge of the bed, ready to eat. What's this? Again, I apologized, this time for being late and not finding a hamburger. Strike two. And I pulled around the rolling table and sat in the wheelchair, and we shared lunch, watching the Little League World Series on TV. Except I could hardly take a bite, feeling like I had totally screwed up this interview before it even began. But after he ate a bit, he seemed much happier and chatted away about what an impressive team Japan had. He also talked about the more than 250 cards and letters he received, although none of them were on display in his room. That's enough. John pushed the rest away, and I helped him lay back in bed and covered him with the blanket. He is on a number of medications and tires easily, so I wasn't sure if our first meeting had concluded. I'm going to keep watching the game. What do you want to know? Okay, I pulled out my tape recorder, but wasn't sure how the recording quality was going to be between the television and the noises in the hallway through the open door. He reluctantly hit the mute button. Oh yeah, strike three. And my interview began. He was not the bubbly, talkative Johnny Carlin I expected from listening to him on DVD commentary tracks. I guess I thought he would just go on about anything he liked, but he didn't. There were many things I didn't get to ask because the subject kept coming back to acting schools, and I was getting more flustered by the minute. After a half an hour, I could see that he was just physically exhausted, and while still trying at times to be polite, was getting increasingly irritated at my stupid line of questions. So I asked if we could pick it up again tomorrow, and he said, no, I've had enough of this, I'm done. My jaw dropped. I flew across the country with the sole intention of spending a 4-day vigil at the bedside of John Carlin. Everyone involved thought it was a wonderful idea, but I guess nobody checked with John. I drove back to my friend's place and spent the evening in his backyard putting away a bottle of wine and blubbering on the phone to Adam, Kim, anyone who would listen. Adam laughed. That means he liked you! You should hear what he says to me! Then he told me a story of his dad and Jonathan Frid getting into a grumpy old man argument over dinner at their last meeting. Adam and I made plans to get together the next day, but by then the situation with his stepdad had worsened and he had to beg off. Well, I'm back home in suburban Philadelphia now in rehearsal for my next show. John is out of rehab, finally, and that has got to make him happier. All those months in the hospital and then nursing homes were making him miserable. He's still calling Adam 50 times a day. I'm off to the Polish American Festival this weekend. This time I'm going to get John a Polski t-shirt. And hopefully he'll remember me as the person who sent him the nice letter and the baseball cap. Hello, this is, it's August 25th, 2013. I'm in Los Angeles, California, talking to John Carlin. I don't know what time it is, I just know it's 3 hours earlier than it should be.
1:50.
3 hours earlier than it is in real life.
Right. You got it.
So, John, I wanted to ask you a few questions.
Yep.
First, I want to start at the very beginning. Tell me about your parents.
My parents? Okay, my father was born in Poland, Poznań, a city, second largest city in Poland. He came here when he was 12 years old. He was an alien because Germany had conquered Poland at the time. So when the First World War started, he enlisted as an alien.
Okay.
You know.
Over here. He enlisted here or in Poland?
No, here. He was here, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
He enlisted here because he was an alien.
Right.
He didn't have to go. Anyway, that's Daddy. Mommy was born underneath the Brooklyn Bridge on Christie Street. And she came from a family of like 14 or 15. Isn't that something? Good God.
Wow.
And we all lived in Brooklyn most of our lives, and I had three sisters. They're all gone.
Oh.
And, hello?
Yeah. Victoria, Mary.
And Irene.
Irene.
Okay. And go ahead, ask another question.
Okay, what was it like growing up in Brooklyn?
It made you tough, and that's good. And that's half the reason I'm an actor. Because I'm tougher than anybody else, and it's good. It's good to be tough. And you better be tough in Brooklyn, and so it was great. It was great, but hard, very hard. I joined the Air Force at 18, from 18 to 22. And then I messed around for a couple of years, and then went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me a scholarship the second year. And I started working right away as an actor. Started working right away. And that was good. Question.
Okay. I'm really jealous. You started working right away as an actor. And I'm still working on it. So.
Are you an actress?
Yeah.
God bless you.
Where did you go to school?
I quit school on my 16th birthday.
What for?
Because I never went. I never went. I can't even remember a day or two. I woke my mother up on my 16th birthday and she took her down to the school, and she signed me out, which was great. And 2 years of fooling around in New York.
I was gonna say, did you hang around on the street corner, or did you get a job?
I had some jobs. Got to know Manhattan real good, and when I got to be 18, I joined the Air Force. Went to Korea right away, and eventually became an actor.
Tell me about Korea. What kind of stuff did you see there?
Well, there was a war going on, that's for sure, but I was right below the front lines. In many ways, Korea was the best year of my life because of the adventure of war and the excitement of it. I mean, it's a bubbling atmosphere. It's great in so many ways. Korea.
Anything you remember about it in particular?
Hard to remember as far as the Korean people. They didn't speak English. We didn't speak Korean, so you're not really dealing with anybody. And it was a great year, though, strangely enough. You know, because the excitement of the enemy overrunning your base. Our base was very close to the front line. And it was a good chance that the North Koreans could have just swept in and did away with us. So there was that excitement. It was good.
What job did you have? What kind of job did you have there?
I was a policeman.
Okay. An MP?
No, I was in the Air Force.
Yeah, no, I MP, like military police.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're in the service, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Right. You're right. And there you go, Korea.
So were you over there the whole time of your service?
No, half the time. Then I went to San Francisco and pulled military police duty, armed service police, they called it. And then I came down to Los Angeles, to Long Beach, for my last year and a half. And I somehow wiggled myself out of the military police, and I ran the hotel on the base for the last 18 months of my career, which was absolutely terrific. I had one day on and 2 days off, and that was wonderful. It was great. I had a good tour of duty, I really did, from 18 to 22. Much more to put in your noggin than going to college, you know, in so many ways.
I don't know, I had a good time in college, but I partied the whole time, so.
Well, there you go. That's
and somehow graduated, but.
Where did you?
I went to Temple University.
Temple, oh, that's a wonderful school.
In Philly, yeah, a theater major.
Yeah, yeah. I really believe that if you're going to be an actor or an actress, it's like, can you run fast? If you can't run fast, sorry. Can you act? You can't be taught to act. You can't go to school to learn to act.
No.
It's impossible.
No. I think you can learn technique.
That's meaningless. I could teach a dog technique almost. I could teach him to grab a bone. I could teach anybody technique, anybody with a brain.
But you still have to have talent.
That's what I just said.
Yeah.
Without that, you're nothing. Either you can act. I've never met somebody who was taught to be an actor. Doesn't exist. Can't be. You could go to school night and day. Not going to do you any good.
And yet you went to acting school.
I didn't know anything at the time. I was just coming out. And they immediately gave me a scholarship. I learned absolutely nothing at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, which is the oldest and supposedly the best school.
Really?
Spencer Tracy, Edward G. Robinson, all these people went there. But they didn't know anything either. And then they found out that, hey, I'm just a natural actor. So that's about it. You know, it's like hitting a baseball. Nobody's going to teach you how to hit a baseball. Nobody. Nobody's going to teach you how to run fast. Nobody. You can run fast or you can't. You can act or you can't. I mean, otherwise it's not an art. Otherwise any schmuck could do it.
You're right. Not everybody can do it. I don't think just anybody can do it.
Well, that's what I just said.
Yeah, I know. I'm agreeing with you.
Thank you. You know, you can learn all the technique in the world, means nothing, absolutely nothing. If you, maybe it isn't an art, I don't know, you know, maybe it's just what it is. But I learned nothing at the American Academy, absolutely nothing, no. Whatever I knew, I knew. Whatever I did, I did. I could face another person like you or somebody mm-hmm. else, look in their eyes and see if they got any talent and brush them off the stage like they were nothing, like they were nothing. And there's a word that comes into what I'm talking about now. It's called ego.
Mm-hmm.
And either, you know, you don't necessarily have to have ego, but I think it's necessary in many ways. So, the reason you're sitting here is because I can act. Otherwise, you're not here. What the hell are you doing here? Right?
Right.
Okay.
You certainly can act.
You know. And I really wonder how much of a art acting is. I think if you can go on the stage, and I can, and play Macbeth or Hamlet, then you're in business. Doing a television show, unless you're playing Willie Loomis and then just throwing everything to the wind, you know. But I mean, I can only tell from the actors I act with and whatnot that they're so minimal in talent. So minimal, you know. Anybody can learn lines and say, where are you going this morning? They could say things, but it doesn't,
mm-hmm.
it's not connected to the soul, to the heart. Stuff like that. I'm not sure if I know what I'm saying, but I'm saying it anyway.
Anybody of note that you were in there with?
Me.
Yeah, I meant besides you.
Redford was a senior, and I was a junior at the time. He was an usher at my wedding, and a good friend for many years. And who else? That's about it. That's about it. But I think actors really, who can act, are like me and not paying any attention to it. They brush it off. Ah, stop. Don't ask questions about acting.
Okay.
Because you can't answer them. I'm talking okay. rhetorically.
Okay.
You can't do that to people. Because there are no answers. Either you have the talent to act, like I just said again, I don't want to repeat myself, but I am.
Yeah.
Or you don't, you know. So there is to it. I mean, telling them to speak louder or move up stage, what the hell does that mean? Who cares? It's got nothing to do with acting.
I saw a guy in New York a couple of weeks ago, looked just like him. I mean, the way he's dressed. With the big tie and the long hair.
That takes all kinds, unfortunately.
Well, of course, he wasn't nearly as elegant. He was a beatnik.
Oh, you better not let Mr. Roger hear you say his ancestors look like any beatnik.
Might not like it, huh? I have to remember that.
Yeah, you better.
Of course, what the guy in New York was really missing was a pin like that one. One on the coat. Must have taken a lot of digging to come up with those diamonds.
Well, I don't actually, per se, teach acting. What I do is I direct a show in the summer with about 200 children in it.
Wow.
And in the course of that, yeah. I have to show them some basics about...
Absolutely. That's a whole different ballgame. I'm a terrible student. Because I would argue the teacher till she's blue in the face. She would know what she would... I don't know what I'm doing. Which is good. Which is good. You gotta fight the system of life, of everything in life. It's a battle.
Question authority.
Senseless authority. Yes, ma'am.
When did you decide you wanted to become an actor? Did you grow up thinking I want to be an actor?
Never once.
When you were a kid, what did you want to be?
Nothing.
Nothing?
No. No. All I did when I was a kid was steal. I was born in Brooklyn. The reason I went into the Air Force was because I was stealing and they were afraid they were going to put me in jail. So I joined the Air Force before they could catch me.
You mean shoplifting?
A lot more than that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. And, but like I said earlier, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, you know, it enhanced me as an actor. If I had some talent, it enhanced it. It was good. It was good growing up in Brooklyn.
It gave you a lot of experience to draw from?
Yeah, it did. It really did. You're absolutely right.
So you got out of the Air Force. What made you decide to go from there into acting?
I didn't. I spent 2 years after I got out of the Air Force, not doing anything. Odd jobs, this and that. And, I did see Marlon Brando in Viva Zapata, and he was a completely different kind of an actor. And I think that he influenced me a lot to become an actor. Of course, I was going nowhere, you know. And then when I went to the American Academy and I got into class and I saw the knuckleheads around me, I said, hey, I found my field. Mm-hmm. This is it. I can do this. You know, I can do it. I don't have to be taught to do it. I can do it. So there it was.
I remember the first time I went to New York, I already did a class at the HB studio.
Herbert Pergo?
Yeah. And I was so intimidated walking in there. Oh my God, you know.
Yeah, yeah. How old were you?
19.
Okay.
So what? So you went to the American Academy, was that in New York?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I thought a lot of Dark Shadows actors are actually graduates.
Of?
AADA.
None of them.
None of them? Because I've seen some of their bios.
None of them.
Really?
Name one.
I'll get back to you on it.
Nobody.
No, you're the only one. All right.
But so what?
No, I just thought I read that.
No.
I didn't know if like Dan Curtis was like
Dan
going...
Curtis
going
high, Dan Curtis hired most people because of the way they looked physically. Which is the right thing to do.
Did he hire you?
Did he hire me? You know what? Somebody was doing my part, and they were awful, and he had seen my work, I guess, and they called me up and said, bah, 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 bah. And I didn't think of it as a career or anything. I just went down there and did some work on Dark Shadows. Yeah. I never signed a contract. I kept doing other things while I was working there. You know, it made it a lot easier.
So the first actor was bad, huh?
Huh?
The first actor, James Hall?
I don't know.
The first guy who played Willie.
Who the fuck knows? I don't know.
Well, everybody always asks why he got fired.
I don't know. I never saw him. I don't know anything about him.
All right. He was in 5 episodes.
Uh-huh.
And he and Dennis Patrick had, like, no chemistry.
I had more chemistry with Dennis Patrick than anybody I ever acted with. It was so funny. It was great.
It was really obvious, too.
Huh?
It was very obvious what great chemistry you guys had.
Oh, he was wonderful, Dennis. And he was a good friend, too. But he was not on it that long. I don't know what the hell. I don't know if they killed him.
They killed him.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
How did he know where to find the girl?
I told you, Barnabas, I don't know.
But you did know he was coming here, didn't you?
Yeah.
How?
Well, I told you, I overheard them talking.
Where did that happen?
Well, I went to the Evans cottage to give Mr. Evans your message, and they were talking about going to the graveyard. That's how I knew.
No one would have known to come to the graveyard, Willie. No one told them, except you.
I didn't tell them Barnabas, honest.
You're a bad liar, Willie. You told them.
Well, Barnabas, I wouldn't do that.
You must have told them. You must have betrayed me.
No,
you shouldn't have done that, Willie. That means I'm going to have to punish you.
I didn't do anything.
I must teach you your lesson, Willie. You'll never betray me again.
So obviously he was a fan of Dark Shadows, the show, right?
Me, yeah.
Yeah, huh?
Yeah, I used to run home when I was 9 years old and watch
it. Wow. Okay.
Watch it after school.
Uh-huh.
Then it came on again in reruns when I was in college.
And you watched it then?
And I watched it again. And I wrote a play about it that I put on in the Black Box Theater.
All right.
At Temple.
All right.
A musical version. I went to one convention. And I met right. you.
Right.
And
where was that and when was that?
That was in L.A. I guess late 70s, maybe 79, something
was
like that.
Was it in San Diego?
No, it was in L.A.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure what year exactly, but...
Right, right. Whatever.
It was around then. It's had another popular resurge since mm-hmm. this remake movie came out last year. Did you see it?
No.
You didn't miss much.
Well, I don't go to the movies anyway, very seldom. And I'm certainly not going to go see a Dark Shadows movie. What, was he a fan of the show, Johnny Depp, when
yeah.
he was a boy?
Yeah, yeah. So was Tim Burton. And Michelle Pfeiffer, who played Elizabeth. They were all big Dark Shadows fans. But that was Fred's last appearance.
Johnny.
He had to walk on. Yeah, what was it like working with him?
Well, when he could get a line, I try to remember it for him.
Yeah, he always said he had a hard time learning lines.
Boy, oh boy. But he was a sweetheart of a guy, so made it easy, very easy.
Who was your favorite actor to work with on the show? Did you have a favorite? Or?
On the show?
Yeah.
No, not really.
Did you get along with everybody?
Extremely well. Extremely well. I had a great time doing the show. It was fun. And they let me loose. They let me do, I mean, you could just see my character, Willie Loomis. He was allowed to do anything. So it was a good time.
Tell me about, are you getting tired?
Go ahead.
All right. When you were in New York.
Yeah.
And tell me about some of the stage stuff that you did.
The first play I did in New York was on Broadway. Paul Newman was in Sweet Bird of Youth.
Mm-hmm.
Rip Torn was in Sweet Bird of Youth. Paul Newman left the show. Rip Torn went into his role. I went into Rip Torn's role. That was 1960. And that was fun. That was great. It was great. The early years of acting were the best. They were the best in many ways. I can look at some television shows I did right back then. And I was as good in them as I was 40 years later. Maybe
yeah.
better. Maybe better. So, whatever.
I've seen pictures of you from the early TV shows. You were playing teenagers for a long time.
Like what?
Kraft TV Theater.
Kraft TV Theater is my first television show I ever did. And it was live. It was fun. I guess. That was 1957.
Okay. There was a couple other ones, I forget.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, there was a couple other things after that that went into the early 60s. But you looked very young.
I looked young until I was 40.
Yeah. That's true, yes. Because you, yeah, even as Willie, you looked like you were about 20 there.
Yeah, I was ready.
You were 34, I think, when you started.
Something like that, yeah, right.
And I guess about 38?
Something like that.
Yeah, when they did the film. So, do you remember working with Tallulah Bankhead?
Well, I didn't work with her, did I?
I thought you did. I thought you did something else with her. Was that a show you stage managed?
Huh?
Did you stage manage a show at one time?
No.
All right, it's in your bio. I could have sworn there was a show listed there with Tallulah Bankhead.
I had a couple of nice days with Joan Bennett on when I was playing a different character than Willie.
Yes, in one time period you were her brother
mm-hmm.
when you were Carl, and in another time period you were her son.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
In 1840 you were Desmond.
Yeah.
That's when you had this severed head in a box.
Do you remember me doing scenes with her?
Yeah.
Interesting lady. Big, big time movie star in the 30s and 40s. Joan Bennett.
Yeah, she was a beautiful lady.
Really was. Yeah.
How was she working? Like, was that a big adjustment for her? Like, working on TV?
Yeah. The learning,
from films?
The learning the lines and all, you know, difficult. But she got through it. Obviously needed the money. She certainly wasn't doing it for the fun of it. Joan Bennett. But most of these people who were on Dark Shadows, they've all come to visit me here.
Yeah, I saw that.
You know, David Selby, Laura Parker, Captain Lee Scott, everybody. Yeah. Which was awfully nice.
James Storm,
Jimmy,
good friend. Yeah.
Very good friend.
That's really nice. Yeah, Laura Parker just wrote a new book.
Yeah, she told me.
Yeah. So she's on a big tour promoting that.
You got enough stuff?
I guess so.
You must forgive me. I am just a...
You look tired.
80-year-old man. Yeah. His body is breaking down.